folks. Scott Weingart here of the MCRIT podcast. But today I'm talking to you from the Practical Evidence podcast. You know, the podcast where we discuss the important, relevant guidelines and clinical policies that will affect your life in emergency medicine and critical care. Today we're going to discuss the guidelines for the management of aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage from the American Heart Association and the Stroke Association. And these just came out. In fact, I think they're still in press because I don't have a real reference. I only have a DOI. So I've went through this extensive, incredibly long, kind of boring document to pick out the 13 things that are relevant to you in the emergency department. So let's go through them. Number one, use some form of scoring system early on in the patient's course and then report this to your neurological professional, whether it be your neurosurgeon, your neurointensivist, your neurointerventionalist. And the two they're recommending are either the Hunt and Hess score or the World Federation of Neurologic Surgeons subarachnoid score. You can find both of those linked in the show notes for the show, which are, of course, at practicalevidence.org. So use the score. This is also a recommendation we have in the Emergency Neurological Life Support course, which will be out very soon. Number two, the risk of early rebleeding is high. So be quick and decisive in getting that aneurysm secured, which means if you need to, transfer early. If you are at a center that already has definitive management, get it done with expedience, because the longer they wait before that aneurysm is secured, whether clipped or coiled, the more likely they are to rebleed. And if these patients rebleed, they do really, really badly. Number three, they are still recommending a lumbar puncture if there is a negative CT scan. Now, what does this mean? It means if you've been hoping you could use that concept of a early negative CT, less than 6 hours, as a way to avoid the LP, you're on your own. The AHA, the Stroke Association, is not allowing that evidence to percolate into their management recommendations yet. And as a result, since no organization has said this is a clever move, you will be in a difficult spot if the patient winds up coming back with a subarachnoid that you did an LP because of that 6-hour CT study by Perry. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do it, but it means your chart better look astoundingly good, and you better pull the Dave Newman approach where it's the patient making that decision. You tell them the best evidence and let them decide rather than you just not even offering them the choice and just deciding you don't feel like doing an LP. Number four, get a CT angiogram if the CT or LP is positive, because you want to track where the actual bleeding's from. You want to see if this is a true aneurysmal subarachnoid as opposed to a perimesencephalic subarachnoid, and you want to get a basic idea of what's going on. Now, I will add my tip. This is not in their guidelines, but I think it's an incredibly important tip for emergency docs. If you go with the patient to CT scan, which we often do on these patients who are having like horrible headaches and they just don't look very good, we go with them because we don't want them to crap out on the CT table. And you're looking at the CT screen and you see subarachnoid blood and this isn't a trauma, please, at that moment, get the CTA. Don't bring them back to your department. Call up neurology or neurosurgery and then they're going to tell you, well, they need a CTA. Now you have to move this potentially unstable patient back to CT. If you see subarachnoid blood on the initial scan in a non-trauma patient, just get the CTA while they're on the table. And if that means you have to write up a note saying we don't have a creatinine, but this is really important, so we're doing it anyway, then do it. If you need to call up the department and have someone put the order in the computer for you, do it. But do not take them back without getting the CTA. Before we go any further, just a word from our Bandwidth sponsor, and that is, of course, EB Medicine. And EB Medicine puts out some of the best evidence-based publications out there. I am the associate editor of their critical care publication, which I just think is the best thing out there for ED critical care and resuscitation. If you want to hear more about EB Medicine, please go to ebmedicine.net/mcrit, and then you could see where the discounts they are offering for our listeners can be found. And these discounts are extensive, and you should support these folks because they are doing it right. They are not taking any money for advertising or any drug company affiliations. They are just pure good evidence. All right, back to the show. Number five, MRI may be useful if there is a negative CT scan, but they are still saying if the MRI is negative, you still need the LP. Now, when would you do this? Well, let's say you had a patient who had a negative CT. They're refusing the LP, but they're like, well, I'll do other stuff. I just don't want a needle in my back. You could conceivably get an MRI, and if the MRI is positive, and it would be an MRA with contrast, then you're done. But if it's negative, they're still saying you need an LP. I don't think this is going to be very relevant or useful in most EDs. Now, there are some EDs out there where it's really, really easy to get an MRI. And these are usually stroke research centers. They're taking all of their ischemic stroke patients to MRI. There's a built-in pathway. They don't need to call anyone and beg. It just happens. Great. If you're in one of those places, you could consider that. It's in no way helpful to me. Number six. Keep the systolic blood pressure less than 160 until the aneurysm is definitively managed with clip or coil. Some of us would push that even further down to 140. Some people even go to 120. I'm a 140 man, but in these guidelines, they say keep it less than 160. Very reasonable. I like nicardipine for that. If there's going to be a delay until clip or coil, use an antifibrinolytic. And they are saying either aminocaproic acid, Amicar, or transexamic acid is fine. And that means, like, if you're in a center that's going to be doing the definitive management, you know, you have your neurointerventionalist or you have subarachnoid specializing neurosurgeons there, you probably don't need it if they're going to be going to the OR or to the interventional suite, you know, in a very short period of time. But if you're in a place that's transferring these patients, it's going to be a couple hours before definitive management, consider a loading infusion and continuous drip of aminocaproic acid until the patient gets definitive management, or transexamic acid, depending on your institution. Number eight, give nimodipine to prevent delayed cerebral ischemia. Now, nimodipine, we don't know why it works. We used to think it prevented vasospasm. Now, that wasn't shown to actually on angio prevent vasospasm, and yet we still know it prevents delayed cerebral ischemia. And what is that? It means you have a patient you've worked really hard on with subarachnoid, you've done all the stuff perfectly, and the patient's now starting to wake up, and you're considering, oh, maybe I'll be able to extubate this patient tomorrow. They could go home. Oh my God, we did so well. And then the next day, they're schlogged out with new neurological findings, and you take them to CT, and they have an ischemic stroke. This is the vasculature of a subarachnoid patient could all of a sudden go into a vasospastic situation, and they could wind up with ischemic strokes. Nimodipine makes the chances of that happening less. And it should be started, you know, as soon as possible. But in the ED, if you forget it and it happens once they get up to the neurointensive care unit, from my reading of the evidence, that's okay. So if you have the time, your neurosurgeon asks you, hey, give me 60 milligrams by the NG tube of nimodipine, do it. This is why they're asking for it. If they forgot to ask and you forgot to do it and it happens an hour later in the neuro ICU, it's not the most important thing going on with this patient. Number nine, they need CSF drainage if there is an acute symptomatic hydrocephalus as a result of their intraventricular blood. And what this means is they really need an external ventricular drain, and that's going to be placed by neurosurgery. It should happen soon. In our place, it happens in the ED as soon as we have symptomatic hydrocephalus on a CT scan. Consider, not do, but consider anticonvulsants in acute subarachnoid hemorrhage management. It used to be across the board, these patients got anticonvulsants because seizures obviously could give you a big spike in ICP. They could rebleed, et cetera. Now it's a little more debatable. Some places are doing it, some places aren't. I wait for our neurosurgeons to get on the phone and I say, hey, would you like your levetiracetam? That's a Keppra, though we're not supposed to say the brand names, but it's just so much easier to say. Or do you want fosphenytoin? And if they say yes, then we do it. And if they say no, then we don't, and I just leave it like that because it's debatable what to do. Number 11, use isotonic fluids. Keep the fluid balance positive, meaning no D5W, no half NS, not even any lactated ringers. Give these patients normal saline. Give these patients plasmolite because you do not want to create a osmotic gradient, and keep them positive, meaning if you gave a gram and a half of mannitol, they're going to pee like a racehorse. You better replace those fluid losses or these patients are going to have big problems. So keep the fluid balance positive. Number 12, keep the patient normothermic. There might even be a role for hypothermia. The studies are still going back and forth on that. But what we know is a fever is really bad in brain injury patients and especially SAH patients. So keep them normothermic, which means you may actually need to cool these patients down to normal temperature if they're spiking fevers. And blood in the brain will cause you to spike fevers. And then last but not least, the relevant one for the emergency medicine folks, control hyperglycemia. Hypoglycemia is bad. Hyperglycemia is bad.